There we go. Okay, so you you were saying about David, you met him at first. When did you meet David?
I can't really remember exactly. Uh-huh. I reckon it might have been in 1963. Uh-huh. Might have been. A connection probably through Claude Breeze to Victor Dory, or alternately a connection through Sam Perry to Dave Orcutt. I think Sam was involved with Dave at the earlier stages. But I remember clearly, and I don't remember much of it, but what it is clear, and it's Victor Dory explaining what David was up to and where he was up to it. It was, I think, one of the old huts out at UBC. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and on some kind of regular basis, he was exploring light, sound, media. I can't remember the precise definitional details around what media, but light and sound generally. And if memory serves, it also involves something like dance. And, of course, the space itself. There was some kind of shaping of the space physically, like environmentally. That probably resonated at the time with what I'd known about happening in New York in the late 50s, early 60s, Alan Capro, Klaus Oldenburg, happenings, so-called happenings. Yeah. So I remember David as probably like the guy doing happenings in the early part of the 1960s in Vancouver. Hmm. But I didn't work directly with him. I spoke to him on several occasions. We spoke about Marshall McLuhan's ideas, if memory serves, in terms of predominantly that was the subject of the discussion after 1963 when McLuhan attended UBC as a guest during the Arts Festival. And all of us, of course, attended. Well, maybe not all of us, but many of us were in the audience for that. Harley Parker, Gerd Stern. Yeah, I met Sam about 64. And he thought I was ideal material for his movie camera. He thought I was very photogenic. And he got me involved with a couple of projects. He was writing for Tisch at the time. And I believe the pieces were called West Coast Tantras. And these were exercises in sensory awareness that he'd probably picked up on when he was in India, in northern India, Tibet. And he was recontextualizing them here. And I remember one movie project, we went out to the Natobi Garden, and he had me doing stuff like getting a fallen leaf and putting it up to my eyes and facing the sun, so I was experiencing this greenness of the leaf being driven directly by sunbeams into my retina. In other words, I was acting out how you would conduct yourself if you were working your way through these exercises he was writing up as West Coast Tantras. I may be wrong on that, but that's what I clearly remember. He knew that I was deeply impressed with the work of William Burroughs and that I was doing a lot of collage work, verbal collage work. I was getting stuff like old kitchen chairs and buying boxes full of newspapers and cutting out all the verbal, large verbal content, headlines and sub-headlines and stuff like that, and gluing all this all over kitchen furniture. So he made a movie of me with a huge pair of scissors. The scissors were about 18 inches long, very, very sharp, with a whole pile of the kind of stuff that I was cutting my way through in those days. And so those are the two projects I remember with Sam. There were others where we were just talking about stuff. I went over to visit him one day, and he showed me this material. It was all perforated was metal. It was about 4 feet by 6 feet. He had it up on a stand vertically. And it kind of looked like a screen, but I wasn't sure, so I asked him what he was doing with it. And what he was doing was projecting onto both sides of it with movie film. And in other words, there was sort of light coming through the holes from one projector and an image filling in all the space between the holes from the other projector. So it was two-sided, and I can't remember what the imagery was precisely, but it was pretty interesting to keep up with where his head was at as far as exploring how to misuse, how to abuse technology and make some discoveries in terms of how it affects us. You know.
So this would have been 65?
Yeah, by 64, 65, I was pretty friendly with Sam. And many of the Tisch poets who were mostly students at UBC. Sam no longer was, but...
Was Sam a poet? Did he consider himself a writer?
Yes, he did.
Uh-huh.
Yes, he did. Yeah, writer, filmmaker.
So he started out academically at UBC?
To the best of my knowledge, I did not know him when he was a student at UBC, but what little biographical information I have about him, I seem to recall that he was a student in the English department in the late 50s or early 60s with many other...
Who would have been teaching there?
Warren Tolman. And Warren was pretty broad-minded guy. He was bringing people like Robert Creeley to be like artist in residence and organized a huge writers' festival made up mostly of Americans. And that wasn't, I don't think that was a real festival of the arts that UBC was holding annually. This was special. This was like a writer's festival that Creeley organized with Warren Tolman. So Charles Olson, Allen Ginsberg, all the real luminaries of the American writing scene at the time came to Canada and read their work, gave lectures, et cetera, et cetera. So there was a very, very intense... poetry involvement around Warren and Warren's curriculum, and I think he ran the department, actually. I may be wrong, but... So there was at least, golly, maybe a dozen people. You know, Dave Cull, Bobby Hogg, Frank Davey, just a huge number. And they put out a magazine called Tisch.
What about Jamie Reed? Was he a part of
that? Jamie,
he
was part of that. Yeah, right. Jamie was part of that. Yeah, very active part of that. So there was this peculiar interface between young individuals who were really into writing, poetry for the most part, a lot of young individuals into painting and sculpture, and then really sort of exotic oddball people like Sam who were into, you know, high-tech stuff like film. Holy shit. there's just all these... In essence, quite separate, different groups, but their paths were always crossing, for whatever reason. I don't know. I mean, I worked at the UBC bookstore with Claude Breeze, so we used to hang out in the cafeteria, and that's where all these Tisch poets hung out. So there was just a lot of friendly camaraderie. It was the kind of architectural space where that happened naturally. Yeah. I don't know if you ever had any contact with the old cafeteria at UBC.
Oh, yeah, sure. Across from the Armory?
Yeah, the long, long tables, right. And huge open space, and just a fabulously well-designed common room, mm-hmm. You know, where people just hung out, took a break, had a coffee, had a tea, chatted with friends, met new people, whatever. I've never seen anything like it since, actually. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there was this crossover and all these paths crossing that... I remember I started UBC 62, 63, something like that. Started meeting these poet people, which is probably how I met Sam, because he was no longer a student. He'd left school, if memory serves, to go off and do this film in India about Tibet. And I saw the film, but you know, it was like 1962, 3, and I cannot clearly recall whether it was shot in Tibet or shot in northern India. I think it was northern India. I don't think you'd just come and go as you wanted into Tibet. But there was a tremendous amount of footage about the monks themselves and how they dressed, how they conducted themselves. I remember being impressed by the color scheme of their robes. They have this saffron yellow cloth and also a sort of an alizarin crimson. And I was impressed with the color relationship. In other words, there was a little bit of yellow in that alizarin, and there was a little alizarin in that crimson. There was this really beautiful, harmony, complementary yet contrasting dynamic going on there. That's one of the things I'll take to my grave. I remember that very, very clearly. It's as if he was trying to show that without saying it. You know, he wasn't saying, oh, notice how the, you know, it was just on the screen in terms of very, very beautifully shot color film. And
so there was an ethnographic approach. There was a very strong ethnographic approach.
Oh, yeah.
Documenting.
Oh, yeah. 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 The living conditions that these people, I guess you know, I mean, they really don't have a culture that separates everything out. This is politics, this is religion, this is industry, this is business. They don't do that. It's all one thing. And I think it was an attempt on Sam's part to try and convey some of that, that these people that were being driven from their land by the Chinese lived a very unique kind of life. And of course he had to show what had become of it in terms of forcing them into the status of refugees, into communes of various kinds in India, northern India for the most part, at the time. And it was, I don't recollect it as being harshly political. It was much more humane, you know. It was looking at the people and contextualizing where they were at that time in relation to where they had been and how they were trying to maintain their way of life, which isn't this fragmented Western kind of idea of civilization. It was a totally different idea about how to be civilized. And unfortunately, I only saw it once, but it had memorable stuff in it, as you can hear from what I'm saying. A family member, I think an aunt, a mother, sister, something like that, left him some money. And at the time, it was a fair amount of money, 30 thou, I remember. And again, that's hearsay. I didn't hear that from Sam, but I heard through the grapevine hearsay. It amounted to that kind of amount. And I think he was a student at UBC at the time, and the impression I'm left with is he just dropped that and had this other idea. He had a vision of going to that part of the world, recording it on film and tape, and bringing it back for Westerners to see. It was just sort of a mission, you know, like a calling maybe, I don't know. And whether or not that was his initiation into film, I couldn't say. He may have been a kid playing with 8mm for years prior to that. I don't know. He knew a lot about 8mm when I met him. In fact, he encouraged me to, if I was interested in film, to start with it. My first movie camera was an 8mm camera. And I think I bought it from him, actually. I can't be sure. And he taught me a lot about how to handle it. He was incredibly steady in terms of hand-holding, incredibly steady. No bouncing around at all for, like, handheld. And I learned a lot about that from him, and, like how to breathe and how to manage your musculature, you know, a certain kind of relationship between grasping, like, the instrument, and then the rest of what's going on physiologically. There's sort of like contractions and articulations and posturings, right? And one thing will kind of obsolesce another. It's a bit like McLuhan's laws of media. Do you know about those?
No. Yes, I do, actually.
Yeah, you know, there's an enhancement process. Yeah. Something gets enhanced by some extension. something gets retrieved that was previously obsolesced. Something does get obsolesced, but it's not what got retrieved. And if you take it to an extreme, it'll flip into its opposite. Similar kind of thing goes on with, like, the physicality, what McLuhan called the wild body. And Sam seemed to be in touch with that. He seemed to have a knowledge of yoga, and that's probably where it came from.
Was he a contemporary of yours, age-wise?
I was pretty young.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was like 43. So I believe he was a year or two older than me, but I can't be sure.
So he might have been 42.
I wasn't even interested in his age. I had no idea what anybody's age was.
Right. Why would you be concerned? Yeah, absolutely.
I have no idea how young he was relative to me. I just know I was generally the younger of everybody around me. You see, after I got back from studying in England, I hadn't gone over